Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 20th of February, 2022, Sunday class. So we'll be continuing from this book, The Ninth Lesson of the Six Patriarchs, Platform Sutta. The last session, which was before Chinese New Year, we were at page 23, yeah? After we will continue from there. This one is the section on how the six patriarch actually received the transmission from the fifth patriarch. Before we start, I would like to maybe do another short briefing, because today I think there was a new person by the name of Grace Lin. She is joining us for the first time. She is from Alostar. I think friend of Puan Chi and husband, Brother Chong. She told me she stay opposite. And she said she wants to learn meditation. So I told her, you can join us during the class. Then in between, read up that book, the blue book, which I sent out to Kayamitas too. And from there, follow us. But what I need to let those people who are new, especially Grace, they all to understand is this Sunday class is slightly different, the format, from the normal Tuesday and Thursday class. Tuesday and Thursday class, we have shorter hours, 8 to 10:30. Whereas this one, the Sunday class, we have 3 hours, 3 to 6. So what we do is immediately after our puja chanting, invocation to the devas, we will start the Dhamma sharing straight away. So this one is based on this book, The Nine Lesson of the Six Patriarchs Platform Sutta, which I delivered in the year 2015. And it was somehow transcribed. And we have it printed in a book form. So we are at page 23. Then after that, at about 4 to 4:30, depending on the time, we will stop for meditation. So the meditation for Sunday class is in between. It's 45 minutes. Whereas for the normal Tuesday class and Thursday class, immediately after the puja, we will immediately have our half an hour of meditation, awareness-based meditation. And after that, we will start our class. We will have the invocation to the devas. Then we will continue with our Dhamma sharing. At the moment, for the Tuesday and Thursday class, we are going through this wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. So Tuesday and Thursday class, they are both same format, continuation. But Sunday class is a different book, different format. Okay, so this one is just for those who are new. Okay, now we turn to page 23. So we will start out with paragraph 2. Page 23, paragraph 2, Sutra. The fifth patriarch saw the astonished assembly and feared that they might become dangerous. Accordingly, he erased the verse with his shoe, saying, this one, means the poem too, had not yet seen his true nature. But in bracket, I make a comment. I say, the word Master Xuanhua used is seen, but this true nature cannot be seen. It's to be realized, because it's not the I see. You have to realize it. Then the assembly agreed. Maybe to let you all recollect, how did we come to this part? It was based on an earlier poem by Shen Xiu. Shen Xiu was the chief disciple of Hong Ren, the fifth patriarch. So one day, Hong Ren felt it was time for all the disciples to come out with a poem to prove that they have the understanding so that he can transmit the patriarchship together with the rope and the bud to signify that they are qualified to receive the transmission from him. Then he told them, he said, it's about time that you all stop seeking those what they call tinted merits. Tinted merits is you make offering, you make dana, you do chanting, you do a lot of good things. But this type of merits are conducive for developing wholesomeness, merits, and all those things. They are useful, but they are called tinted merit because it's tinted by some motive behind. It's not the wisdom type of merits. So wisdom type of merit can lead to enlightenment, awakening, development of wisdom to liberate the mind so that you are not caught within the wheel of birth and death. Means samsara will not have power over you. So because of that, the fifth patriarch say, please do not chase after tinted merit because life is short. You better strive on with heedfulness to develop the cultivation and develop the understanding so that you may have the causes and condition to awaken and to take across all other beings. And because of that announcement, everybody was very excited. And one group of disciples that follow Shen Xiu decided to tell the other disciple. He said, we all shouldn't be writing. We just leave it to our chief disciple, Master Shen Xiu, to do it. And he should be the rightful person to come out with the poem and become eligible for the transmission. But Shen Xiu was under pressure, tremendous pressure, to come out. And he's scared if he was to openly like declare or write the poem or the thing. What happened is that if the fifth patriarch doesn't agree to it or doesn't feel that he is up to the mark to receive the patriarchship. So he was very, very uneasy inside. A lot of doubt. The mind become like not settled. So finally, after a long period, a few days of thinking and what the sutta say, doubt and uncertainty, he finally come up with an idea to protect himself. He said he wait till middle of the night. He will go and write the poem. Then the next morning when people notice it, they will inform the patriarch. So if the patriarch were to say this is good and ask who is the one who wrote this, then he will admit and say he is the one. So that was solve his problem. But he didn't have the penetrative awakening. He has not realized his true nature. He has not understood the true mind, the silent mind within. And because of that, his poem was limited. But not bad. Actually, it's based on the sainthood way. If you cultivate according to his poem, the sainthood way is no problem. Because his poem is like, he said, this body and mind of ours is like a bodhi tree. Where bodhi is enlightened. The Buddha sat under the bodhi tree and become enlightened. So it's called the tree of enlightenment. So he said this body of ours is like a bodhi tree. Then the mind is like a mirror bright on the stand. Then he said, polish it until it shines so that no dust can alight, so that it's always ever mindful, then bright and other things. But then the fifth patriarch knew he has not penetrated that enlightenment, means he has not realized the true nature, the true mind. He was actually at the gate of enlightenment, but he doesn't know how to seize his mind to go in. So because of that, the fifth patriarch actually didn't say whether it's good or bad. The fifth patriarch said, okay, you all should recite this, he told the other disciple. He said, if you recite this and practice according to it, a lot of merits will arise and you will never be born in the woeful state. Means sainthood is possible. So Sun Xiu, of course, was very happy. So he said, yeah. When the fifth patriarch approached him, you wrote that poem. He said, yeah, I wrote that poem. So hinting to the fifth patriarch whether his poem is up to the mark or not to receive the transmission. But the fifth patriarch is very compassionate. He actually gave him a chance. He explained quite a lot to Sun Xiu. He said, based on what you have written, you are very near. But you have not penetrated. Why not you go back and write me another poem, is it? To show that you have the understanding, that I will transmit the patriarchship to you. Once you heard that, he became fearful again. He tried very hard, but he couldn't come up with another poem. Then in the meantime, what happened was, the whole temple, people were reciting this poem of Sun Xiu. Then as they passed by the kitchen area where Hui Ning was pounding the rice, Hui Ning heard this poem and asked the Novik monk who recited it. He said, what is it that you are reciting? Oh, the Novik monk said, this is a famous poem written by Sun Xiu. He said, the fifth patriarch commented, say that it's very good. If you practice according to this, you will not fall into the evil destiny, the four woeful state. Then Hui Ning said, can you bring me that? I also would like to have a look at the poem. So that's why Hui Ning went. Then as he was there, there was another person, I think is an outsider, a lay person. Then Hui Ning suddenly said, I also have a poem to share, where he knew what Sun Xiu has written was limited. He has not seen the true mind, the true nature. He has not penetrated it. Then he asked the person, the lay person, to help him to write. The lay person was very surprised. He said, why can't you write yourself? Why must you need me to write? He said, I'm an illiterate. I didn't go to school. I don't know how to write. I don't know how to read also. I said, I need you to read to me. Then I will read to you and you help me to write. So initially, the person who was a lay person, he was very surprised. How amazing. An illiterate. Yet you want to write poem and don't know how to write all these things, then the Huining, the future sixth patriarch, he told this lay person, he said, do not slight anybody because you never know. He said, the one that doesn't look the smartest may be the one that has the awakening. But the one that is very impressive may not have the true Dhamma or the understanding. So he said, if you are a true Dhamma practitioner, you shouldn't slight anybody. Then he said, okay, I will write for you. But promise to take me across if you gain enlightenment or the patriarch, you will say. So he started to write. The moment that poem was recited, everybody was shocked. A counter sensuous poem. He tears sensuous poem apart. He said, Puti Peng Wu Su. His Bohi has nothing to do with the tree. Bohi is an enlightenment, awakening, nothing to do with the tree. Then Ming Jing Yi Fei Tai means that Mirror Bright understand that is not the true mind. That is the mundane mind. Then he said that nature originally Ben Lai Hu Yi Wu He Chu He Chen Ai Na. He said originally there was nothing empty. Then where can the dust alight? Because you don't arise a mind to hold on to it, to let it dwell. So that poem actually stunned a lot of people who read it. They say, how amazing is it? Illiterate, never come out to the shrine in front to cultivate, to study the Dhamma, to listen to the Dhamma. And yet he can come out with such amazing poem. So like what the sutta say, the fifth patriarch saw that the assembly was very surprised, astonished assembly, and fear that they might become dangerous, because when they know that this guy is wiser than Sensio, it may give rise to problem. So the fifth period quickly used his shoe to rub it off and tell them, never mind, forget about this poem. Yeah, this poem also, he said, he used this word, he said, this part, which is the poem, also has not yet seen his nature. So this is what the fifth patriarch mentioned. But the fifth patriarch's meaning is different. He knew Huining has this ability to understand that. But he is still like very, we call it, very raw, very inexperienced. He realized what that thing is. He has a glimpse that he was born without the mundane mind. So he knew that true mind, but he doesn't really understand it. He doesn't really know how to use it and make use of it to develop the full awakening and all those things. Not until later. Later. So now you continue the sharing, then you all can follow. Okay. So when the fifth patriarch clean off the poem, the assembly agree, oh, never mind, you have they thought the 53 also does not agree to what is written by Huining. Then I continue, I say, then we move on to the next section of the sutta. The next day, the patriarch, means the fifth patriarch, secretly went to the threshing floor, the kitchen there, where he saw Huining pounding rice with a stone tied around his waist, and he said to Huining, a seeker of the way would risk his very life for the Dhamma. Is this not the case? Here, the English translation was not so good. That's why I put the word bracket, risk. He used the English translation as a seeker of the way would forget his very life. So it should be the word risk. That the English word forgot or forget is not appropriate. So the fifth patriarch knew why Huining was so daring to come out with a poem. Then we move on to the next section of the sutta. I say, never mind, we will also read the commentary on page 80, because I also don't know what Xuan Hua wrote. So this part is a commentary by Master Xuan Hua. The next day, everyone was quiet and no longer worrying about who was enlightened and who was not. The fifth patriarch secretly left his room and went quickly to the threshing floor, or means the kitchen area, to see the great excuse me, Master Huining. As he went to peer about to see if anyone was looking, just like Sun Xiu, when he had finished writing the verse, he ran silently, darting glances over his shoulder to make sure no one saw him. When the fifth patriarch got to the threshing floor, he saw Huining pounding rice. He had tied a stone around his waist and pound rice so that others could eat. What was he doing? He was practicing the Bodhisattva way, forgetting others and having no notion of self. He did not think, why should I pound the rice for you to eat? You don't work. You don't do anything at all. I pound rice all day and it's very difficult. He did not think that way. Instead eating, he has thought, you do not work fine. I will do it myself. Just like one of my disciples who was so busy that when he was called to lunch, he said, wait a minute. I really like that kind of disciple, but not everyone can be like him. Then the fifth patriarch asked, isn't that so? Means risking his life. Remember this, it must be this way. You must give up being afraid of difficulty to the point of forgetting to eat. No one knows how many days the sixth patriarch went without food. No one called him to eat, and he himself forgot about it until he had no strength. He tied a heavy rock around his waist to add weight to his body so that he could pound the rice. I think he used the stone to add to his bodily weight because he had not eaten for some time. That is Master Xuan Hua's commentary here. But I said, I think this is Master Xuan Hua's commentary, but in real life, I don't think this is the case. He still eats, but he eats with understanding and he adds on the weight because he is not heavy enough to pound. So adding the stone pestle is just a skillful means which is appropriate so that it can make your weight heavier. Then with that, you need less effort to lift the pestle that pound the rice. Okay, we shall go on. However, you should not get attached and think it was definitely like that. On the other hand, don't think it definitely wasn't like that. The profound insight comes from precisely that kind of non-attachment. This is Xuanhua's way of explaining. So the above is based on Xuanhua's commentary. We just leave it. Then page 81 of the sutra, the Sixth Patriarch Platform Sutra. The sutra continued. He said, then the Fifth Patriarch asked, is the rice ready? This one is interesting, the exchange. Huineng replied, the rice has long been ready. So, in bracket is my comment. Actually, the English use is not so good. The other version, ready long ago since the day I arrived, is a better version. This one is probably in the internet. This is better. It is now waiting only for the sieve. This one, the reply by Huineng was very good. The rice was ready long ago, waiting for the sieve. The patriot tapped the pestle 3 times with his staff and left. Huineng then knew the patriot's intention, and at the 3rd watch, he went into the patriot's room, sunken, 6 hours later. So this is how the transmission started. I will continue with the commentaries. So we might have to spend time going through the commentary first. The fifth patriarch wrapped the pestle 3 times with his staff and left. All monks who have left the home life to become bhikkhu often carry a walking stick. Sometimes these staffs are made of twisted wine. Vines. The great master Xu Yin said, we got to pick the ivy lively like a dragon, beating wind and rain, beating empty space. The ivy vine curves and twists like a dragon who, by attacking the wind and rain, attacks empty space. That is certainly a case of going out to look for trouble. If that rains were as busy as my disciple, it would have no time to beat space and wind. Knock, 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 when the fifth patriarch start, and how do you know he left? If you know, then you know. If you don't know, then you must wait till I tell you. He went out with his 2 hands behind his back, holding the crooked staff. Why did the patriarch tap 3 times? Do you understand the meaning of that? The sixth patriarch understood right away. The tapping means come to my room at the 3rd watch at midnight. This is called speaking the Dhamma without words. Here in the meditation hall, for example, when the wooden fish is hit 2 times, it means walk. Hit 1 time, it means stop and sit down. Hit 3 times, it means meditate, walk up. All these are like speaking the Dhamma without words. Why did the fifth patriarch carry his staff behind his back? Now you are going to ask, how did you know he carried it behind his back? Since it doesn't say so in the sutta. Well, how do you not know? I know that. You don't know. He carried it behind his back to indicate that the sixth patriarch should come in by the back door. Do not let the others see you come. That one is true. If the fifth patriarch had said openly, come to my room at the 3rd watch and we will have a little talk, I'm sure that the word would have spread like wildfire to Sun Xiu's ear, and Sun Xiu and his disciple would have come, would have not been very kind to the sixth patriarch. The fifth patriarch tested the sixth patriarch's wisdom by tapping his staff 3 times and putting it behind his back. The sixth patriarch understood, but no one else. They were all as if deaf or dumb. without any idea as to what had transpired in this wordless exchange of Dhamma. At midnight, as soon as the sixth patriarch enters the room, there was a quick exchange. "What are you doing here?" demanded the fifth patriarch. "But the patriarch told me to come at the third watch," came the reply. "Really? Did I tell you that? How could I have forgotten? What do you think you are doing? Why did you come in through the back door instead of the front door? Did the master not tell me to use the back entrance?" The fifth patriarch laughed and said, "You are not bad, really not bad. You are all right, Miss. Winning has the wisdom. You ask, how do I know that? I ask, how do you not know it?" That was a commentary by Master Shen Wang, but it's not important. We should go back to the sutta, which is more interesting. The patriarch covered them with his precept sash, so they could not be seen. And he explained the Diamond Sutta for him down to the line. "One should produce a thought that is nowhere supported." This one is a very powerful awakening. This one is actually recited by the other merchant before Hui Ning came. So here the sutra differs a bit. Anyway, we shall read on to see what Master Shen Hua's commentary is. So commentary by Master Shen Hua. The fifth patriarch was afraid that someone might have seen the great Master Hui Ning enter his room and might be outside the window eavesdropping. At that time, the window was made of paper. So to ensure privacy, the fifth patriarch pulled his robe over both their heads. The fifth patriarch's explanation of the Diamond Sutta was not a public one, such as I have given you. His was a secret and very difficult explanation, telling the sixth patriarch how to forge an indestructible Vajra body. When he heard the word, "One should produce a thought which is nowhere supported," Hui Ning achieved the great enlightenment and knew that all the 10,000 Dhamma are not separate from the self nature. He suddenly experienced the even greater enlightenment. Although the sixth patriarch knew the method, his applications of views and thought have not yet been completely eliminated. That he was waiting for the thief can mean also that no one had certified him, even though in his intense vigor he had reached a high peak and the fire in the sensual was pure green. He had not yet been certified by a good knowing advisor. So when the fifth patriarch heard him say that the rice was ready and merely waiting for the seed, he prepared to certify the sixth patriarch. "Because I had a kind of radar, I was able to record their conversation, and I shall now replay it for you. Keep in mind that this is Tang Dynasty recording, not the present day." So this one is Shen Hua's joke. "Do you want to reach Buddhahood?" asked the fifth patriarch. "Yes," said the sixth patriarch. "I just want to be a Buddha. I do not seek anything else. I only want to attain Buddhahood." "Your resolution is extremely firm," replied the fifth patriarch. "But if you want to realize Buddhahood, you must first cut off ignorance. For it is ignorance which produces the affliction of delusion, brought on the false view and false thought. If you want to cut off this affliction, you must first cut off ignorance. For example, the cycle of birth and death is based on the state of emotional love. When you break through ignorance, then the delusion of false view and false thought, which are tied to birth and death, also cease to exist. For ignorance is the root of perfect death. You want to cut off ignorance and thereby put an end to perfect death. Then, as the Diamond Sutra say, produce a thought which is nowhere supported. That means, do not dwell on emotional love. Get rid of desire and cast out craving. Then you can bring an end to birth and death. The sixth period heard this and suddenly became enlightened. He saw to his original face and said, "Ah, it is basically just like that. It's not difficult at all. In fact, it's very easy." Thus, he became enlightened. So this is Xuan Hua's commentary. This has been a Tang Dynasty recording which has just been played for you to hear. In cultivating and studying the Buddha Dhamma, you should produce an unsupported thought. Means a thought that has no dwelling, doesn't dwell anywhere. That means to dwell neither in emotion nor love. If you dwell in emotion and love, you dwell in ignorance and thus in birth and death. If you do not dwell in emotion or in love, if you do not dwell in existence or non-existence, you know the middle way. The middle way is not separate from existence and is not separate from emptiness, nor does it exist elsewhere. The ability to transform emotion and love into genuine prajna or wisdom is enlightenment. Not changing them is confusion. It is said, although the sea of suffering, Kuhai, is inexhaustible, a turn of the head is the other shore. The difference between confusion and enlightenment is just in knowing how to turn. If you accept emotion and love and run after desire, then the more you run, the more confused you become. You can turn your head, you arrive at Nirvana, the other shore. If you do not turn your head, you become more and more confused. The more confused, the further away you are, and deeper you sink into confusion. But although you are extremely far, one turn can be sudden enlightenment. Sudden enlightenment is awakening. Once you awaken, you are the Buddha. You may be thinking, if I become a Buddha, there won't be any more work for me to do. Wouldn't I just sit in a lotus flower all day and wait for people to come and light incense and bow before me? Frankly, I don't think that sounds the least bit interesting. If that is what you think, you can go on being a living being. But you can be a living being who is a friend to others, taking them across to Buddhahood, means become a Bodhisattva. You need not worry about Buddhahood being uninteresting. Yesterday, I talked about the ghost who had no problem or trouble, and as a consequence, did not want to become a human being or person. So this is Xuan Hua's poem. I've been a ghost for 3,000 years, without happiness, without fear. Sheng Kuang tells me to go to a man. But I really just don't think I can. The ghost have no fear. But they only come out at night because they belong to the yin, the darkness principle. The Buddha is totally young, like the light of the sun. So you decide, do you want to be a ghost or a Buddha? If you want to be a ghost, then it is all right to have emotion and love. But if you want to be a Buddha, you must produce a thought which is nowhere supported. So this part was Master Xuan Hua's interpretation. This part was not in the new translation. That's why I saw the new translation as given in my Heart Sutta Short Notes book. That one is more authentic. Anyway, we shall move on to the next section of the sutta and see what Xuan Hua say. This part of the sutta is very good. At the moment he heard those words, Huining experienced the great enlightenment. And he knew that all the 10,000 Dhamma was not separate from the self nature. He said to the patriarch, how, here again the translation of Xuan Huan, the English word is not so good. They use the word unexpected. I think it's a direct translation from the Mandarin, must be. The self nature is originally pure but in itself. Actually, the word should be how amazing. They were really amazed. How amazing, the self nature is originally not produced, not destroyed. How amazing, the self nature is originally complete in itself. How amazing, the self nature is originally without movement. How amazing, the self nature can produce the 10,000 dhammas. So this part is quite similar, except the word they use unexpected. We should change it to amazing. And we skip the rest and go on to the sutta section again. The fifth patriarch knew of Kuan Yin's enlightenment to his original nature and said to him, studying the Dhamma without recognizing the original mind or the true mind is of no benefit. If one recognizes one's original mind and see one's original nature or true nature, then one is called a great hero, teacher of man and God, a Buddha. Okay, we shall go on to the next section of the sutta. So he received the Dhamma in the third watch, and no one knew about it. The fifth patriarch also transmitted the sudden teaching and the rope and the bowl or the arms bowl, saying, you are the sixth patriarch. Protect yourself carefully. Take living being across by every means and spread the teaching for the sake of those who will live in the future. Do not let it be cut off. So based on what is written here, I think the translation differs. Based on what we have got from the other version, which I had extracted from the internet, that one is more authentic. And I had used that version in our Heart Sutta short notes sharing. This first verse, the mind must have no dwelling. He actually heard it from the merchant earlier on, before he came to see the fifth patriarch. And when the fifth patriarch expounded the Diamond Sutta to him halfway through, Kuan Yin suddenly became greatly enlightened. Suddenly, Kuan Yin awakened to a very profound and great enlightenment. Can you all remember what that section was? When the fifth patriarch read to him that part, which part was it? Can anybody recall? It's not this part. This part was by Master Xuan Huan. The other one, which was in the Heart Sutta short note, and that one is very accurate. The fifth patriarch explained to Kuan Yin, because the self nature or the true nature was already complete, thus, thus, without anything. Then he continued, even if you have understood this, you have to know that as a living being, when you come to this world, there is another mind, which is the mundane mind. This part was the authentic version, the conditionalizing mind. You have to learn how to use that mind and yet not be affected by it or not to be deceived by it. The moment he heard that, he came to great enlightenment, and that one was very profound, and that was the authentic version. So as far as this version is concerned, you just have an open mind. His understanding is this way. Maybe he got it from another source. Then we move on. We have to turn the page 94. So page 94 is that sixth patriarch platform sutta book, not our book. The patriarch further said, in the past, when the first patriarch, great master Bodhidharma, first came to this land, and people did not believe in him, yet he transmitted his robe as a symbol of faith to be handed down from generation to generation. The Dhamma is transmitted from mind to mind, leading everyone to self-awakening and self-enlightenment. From ancient time, Buddha only transmitted the original substance, the Buddha. Masters secretly transmit the original mind to master. Since the rope is a source of contention, it should stop with you. Do not transmit it, for if you do, your life will hang like by a thread. So this was the instruction from the fifth patriarch to Hui Ning. That's why after Hui Ning, he didn't pass down anything. It's the arms bow and the rope was no longer necessary to be passed down. So that's how after the sixth patriarch, he was advised not to pass on the arms bow and the rope anymore. Then we go on to page 95, last paragraph. The fifth patriarch told Hui Ning, "You must go quickly, for I fear that people might harm you." Hui Ning asked, "Where shall I go?" The patriarch replied, "Stop at Hui and hide." Stop at Hui and hide at Hui. Stop at Hui and hide at Hui. Hui Ning received the robe and bow in the third watch. He said Hui Ning is a southerner and does not know this outer road. How does one reach the mouth of the river? The fifth patriarch said, "You need not worry, I will accompany you." The fifth patriarch called him to the Zhuijiang Korea station and ordered him to board a boat. The fifth patriarch took up the oar and row. Hui Ning said, "Please, high master, sit down. It is fitting that your disciple takes the oar." The patriarch replied, "It is fitting that I take you across." Hui Ning said, "When somebody is deluded, his master takes him across. But when he is enlightened, he takes himself across. Although the term take across is the same in each case, the function is not the same." So in Mandarin it's better to. They use the word to. So that was the conversation. We shall now go to the commentaries. So this commentary is by Xuan Hua. The fifth patriarch instructed the sixth patriarch to leave quickly, for he knew that Sensu's follower would certainly want to kill him when they realized that he had inherited the patriarchship. "Do not stay here," fifth patriarch says. Stop at Huai and hide in Hui. Huai is a district of Guangxi, Wuzhou, and Hui is Suhui, now called Xinhui. The high master is a respectful form of address used for a teacher or an abbot. So the sixth patriarch used it to address the fifth patriarch. High master, it is only proper that your disciple take the oar. "Hey," say the fifth patriarch, "let me take you across." The master and disciple exchange courtesies. But although they each use the same term, take across, it means something different in each case. For the teacher, to take the disciple across is not the same thing as the disciple to take the teacher across. Hui Ning understood. When the student is confused, he said, "Teacher must save him." But when the student becomes enlightened, he must save himself. Before becoming enlightened and obtaining the original substance of the self nature, the disciple is confused and lost. His teacher advised him to work hard. "Do not be afraid of the pain in your leg when you sit in meditation. If you are afraid of suffering, you cannot become enlightened." This one is very true. The sixth patriarch, when he hung a stone around his waist so that he could pound the rice harder, was not afraid of suffering. The rock which the lay Man Lu, the sixth patriarch, used to tie around his waist when he bound Rice is still at Ping Mao Mountain at Dongshan Chanshi. And carved on the rock is the inscription, the Rock of Quinning. The former layman Lu tied around his waist. So this one, it seems, is still there. Then the sutra continued. Quinning was born in the frontier region, and his pronunciation is incorrect. Yet he had received the Dhamma transmission from the master. Now that enlightenment has been attained, it is only fitting that he take his own nature across. The patriarch replied, "So it is, so it is. Hereafter, because of you, the Buddha Dhamma will be widely practiced. 3 years after you depart, I will leave this world." Means the fifth patriarch will pass away. 3 years after your departure, I will leave this world. Start on your journey now and go south as fast as possible. Do not speak too soon, for the Buddha Dhamma arises from difficulty. So based on this statement, he will come to understand that the fifth patriarch would pass away into Parinibbana 3 years after Quinning left him. We can skip this part and go to page 101, the sutta. After Quinning took leave of the patriarch, he set out on foot to the south. In 2 months, he reached the Tao Mountain. The fifth patriarch returned to the monastery, but for several days he did not enter the hall. The assembly was concerned and went to ask, "Has the master some slight illness or problem?" "There is no illness," came the reply, "but the rope and Dhamma has already gone south." "Who received the transmission?" they asked. "The able one obtained it," said the patriarch. The assembly then understood, and soon several hundred people took up pursuit, all hoping to steal the rope and the mud. So this was in the sutta. This part was not mentioned in the summarized version, but the next section which we are going to read is reflected in the video show, the Six Patriarch Winning Show. So I believe this part was in the sutta. So turn to page 103. This one is also quite interesting. The sutra say one bhikkhu, Hui Ming, a coarse natured man whose lay name has been Chen, had formerly been a fourth class military official. He was intent in his search and ahead of others. When he had almost caught up with Quinning, the latter tossed the book, the rope and the bud onto a rock, saying, "The rope and the bud are token of faith. How can they be taken by force?" Quinning then hiked in a thicket. When Hui Ming arrived, he tried to pick them up, but found he could not move them. He cried out, "Cultivator, cultivator, I have come for the Dhamma, not for the rope." Quinning then came out and sat cross-legged on the rock. Quinning made observant and said, "I hope that the cultivator will teach the Dhamma for my sake." Quinning said, "Since you have come for the Dhamma, you must put aside all conditions. Do not give rise to a single thought, and I will teach it to you clearly." So that sentence is very important. Do not give rise to a single thought. Is silent completely. That is what meditation is. That's why in the bracket there, I explained, I said, "Can you do it? Now I shall say to you the same thing. Do not give rise to a single thought. You try, you can try. Then I will help you awaken. You can do that. You are already destined for enlightenment." After a while of silence, Quinning said, "With no thought of good and bad, means with no thought of good and no thought of evil, at just this moment, what is superior one? Hui Ming's original face. At this word, Hui Ming was greatly enlightened. See, it's so easy. So, can we try now? Laughing. So the commentary we shall read through now. I think maybe we can stop here. We will stop here. We will mark this page, page 40. We will continue the commentary later on. So this advice that the sixth page here give to Hui Ming is very good. You can have a mind that is without thought, then you are destined for enlightenment. In fact, meditation is just that. Can you just relax, maintain awareness, silent, don't think, don't do anything? You should find out. You should try it out in the meditation, see what happens. And when you can do that, one day you will understand. Because the moment you are without thought, the awareness will come back. The true mind, the original mind, will return. That is your true mind. That is your true nature. Then when you realize that, stabilize it, you will awaken. Your enlightenment is basically the silent mind without thought. Means you have to develop the meditation to come to this understanding that you have two minds. One is the mundane mind, the conditioned arising mind, the thinking mind. That one is very, very active, very heedless. Before you have the right view, right understanding, and the number, you will be heedless. You will think a lot. This mind will wander everywhere, lashes onto all the phenomenal world of form and consciousness. Then it becomes entangled. But when you are able to meditate, means to develop the understanding to completely silence your mind. Then you can completely silence your mind without thought. That is your true mind. That is your true nature, which is tranquil, still, unmoving. So stabilize that. Then you will know this is the unconditioned, without thought, without words, without concept or idea. There will be no more emotion, no more duality, nothing. So the realization of that true mind, that true nature, is very important, where there is the unconditioned. From there, all things arise. You must see it. Then you must understand the form and mind is not what you think. Your true nature is beyond. The form and mind is karmically conditioned out for you to come to this existential world, to allow you to perform the function of a human being, to cultivate, to go through life, to experience karma, to fulfill your vows, to do your duties, to experience everything that you want to experience. So this understanding of the conditioned and the unconditioned are very, very important. Without this understanding, you cannot penetrate. So okay, with this explanation, hopefully it will help you to develop the meditation of this. Okay, we will off the light. Then we can have our 45 minutes of awareness space meditation. Just relax body and mind completely. Relax means be at ease. No need to think, no need to do anything, just silent completely. When you are relaxed, you got no problem. You are at ease, completely at ease. And whatever arises, let it arise. Don't resist, don't fight, don't do anything. Then always remember, the moment you are without thought, you are already aware. So the second support is, after you relax body and mind, you maintain awareness. To maintain awareness is not to think, because the moment you are without thought, you are already aware. So not to think is very important, but you cannot force your mundane mind not to think. You cannot tell the mundane mind to stop thinking unless you have trained it. You have developed the understanding, the wisdom, and the awakening. Otherwise, it can't. It will continue to think. So the second step is very important, the second support. Maintain awareness. Means whatever arises, let it arise. It can be a thought. It can be an emotion or whatever. Or tactile contact between the senses and the external phenomenal world. Whatever, the way, finish. The way, finish. That's why you maintain awareness. Just aware, finish. The way, finish. So if you are patient enough, you don't allow the thought to continue to create thinking. You don't try to know. Don't try to do anything, then this thought will lose its momentum and cease. Initially, it will slow down, then finally, it will come to an end. That's why we call it the ceasing of that emotion. The very flowering of that thought is the very ending of that thought. Means when it flowers until it's no more energy to flower, means the thought cannot move anymore, the emotion cannot move anymore. So the supporting condition behind, when it ceases to be, then that whole dependent originating mind state also ceases. So the fourth support is based on this understanding. First is to relax. Relax into every mind state that arises. Whether it's a tension or a tightness or stress within, you just relax. Be at ease. Let things be. Then maintain awareness. The way, finish. The way, finish. Don't try to know anything. If you want to anchor it to something, you can, like your skillful means, object of meditation or whatever, your anapanasati or whatever. You anchor it to that, then maintain awareness of the object of meditation. It can be rising, falling, or whatever. Yeah. Then for those who are more skillful, already quite stable, you can stay at the heart area. Yeah. Then wherever you can detect any vibration or your heartbeat, stay there, be with it until the awareness and the movement become one. Yeah. Then allow the mind to develop the stability of the awareness. Just aware, don't try to know, don't try to do anything. Then the third support is stabilize it. Maintain the awareness for as long as you can. In fact, meditation, awareness-based meditation, is very easy to develop the awareness within, then to stabilize it. Then after you can do that, you will come to realize what that silent mind is, what that true mind is. Then you will come to understand without thought, who are you, what are you? So all this understanding will help you develop the meditative understanding leading to the awakening. then you can see very clearly how your thinking arises, how thought arises, how the mundane thinking, mundane activity, the aggregates of mind, how they come to be. Following exactly what the Buddha mentioned, the law of dependent origination, Paticca-samuppada, the dwelling. Dependent on something, something arises. If there is no avijja, there is no thinking, no sankara. That's why avijja paccaya sankara. Then sankara make contact with the brain. That's why it arises mental consciousness. So avijja paccaya sankara, sankara paccaya vijnana, that's how it come about. Then you input the content of consciousness. It becomes namarupa, the fourth link. Then dependent on this namarupa, there must be sense basis, salayatana. Then because of salayatana, there must be contact. Salayatana are your sense basis. So to arise consciousness, there must be contact. So contact of sense basis with the mundane mind, with the pure consciousness, that trigger of the namarupa is very important. You can see it very clearly. So they always say upon contact, feeling arises. Actually, feeling is one of the seven universal. Apart from feeling, there is also contact. Then there is also perception, manasikara, many other things inside there. Yeah. But once it becomes namarup, means the form of mind, the thought, that one you should see clearly with awareness. The whole content of consciousness is everything that your mind can do. That's why you can see how your views, opinion, conditioning, belief system, how they come in and condition you into various form of delusion, how you are being deceived by the phenomenal of form and consciousness through delusion, through ignorance, especially Sakkaya Ditthi self-delusion. You cling on to the egoic self, the egoic mind. Then from there, the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, possessiveness, envy, jealousy, fear, worry, anxiety, all these emotions arise. These are the evil roots that condition your wrong thought, your deluded thought. So meditation is to silence everything, to observe all this, to come to understand clearly who are you, what are you, and you, how you function as a human being, and what is this form of mind is all about. Beyond the form of mind, what are you, who are you? Is there another nature within that is beyond the thought, beyond the thinking mind? So all this is part and parcel of the whole process of meditation. Understanding all this will bring about awakening, enlightenment. So I will set the alarm for 45 minutes so that you can continue with your awareness-based meditation. You can either sit or lie down or lean against the wall or sit on a chair if your leg is having problem. Otherwise, you can try your sitting. Whatever posture is not important. The more important thing is to train your mind to be completely without thought, silent, following the four support, relax, maintain awareness, then maintain awareness for as long as you can, technically 24 hours. Then the last part is, the last support is trust. Trust is only for those who have already developed the meditation, stabilized the awareness nature already, and then you stay around the heart area and trust your nature to do the meditation to locate the gateway into your nature. So there is a force support, which most people will not have to do until later. Okay, yeah. You can slowly mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind states that you have trained to develop the ability to be heedful, to be aware in the midst of life. Then make full use of this trained mind state to live life, to develop heedfulness in life, and to develop the daily mindfulness, stability of it. Okay, now we will continue with our second session. This next session is meditation reporting.
Hello.
Hello.
Amitabha,
yes.
Gratitude, yeah. And all kindness.
Yes.
Okay. What shall we talk about today? Gratitude, actually, for me, because of my family, how do you call that? Family new addition, right?
Yes.
Preparation for my daughter's wedding. So actually, I like to seek practical advice and what is the to have some understanding. What is the because I have not really have a proper understanding of a family wedding following the Buddhism way.
So, is it the first time you are doing it for your children?
Yes, correct.
Oh, okay.
So I want to understand from Mrs. Teo and Brother Teo, huh?
Yeah,
I understand your son already married, right?
No, like your registration of marriage.
Oh, registration of marriage also.
About 1 year plus already.
So, okay, maybe through Brother Teo's understanding, what?
My daughter was married many years ago. I think was married in the year 2012. So that was quite long ago. What is it that you want to develop understanding? Is there any particular aspect?
Yes. You see, for me, I mean, I have not understand anything from my Buddhism class in the temple on this aspect.
Okay.
So I have not read any books that, I mean, at least I have not come across.
There's a sutta, Sigalovada Sutta. The Buddha talk about it, how you conduct yourself as a human being, your relationship with your children, with your staff, with your in-law, with your neighbors, with all the other people that you have relationship with. It's all mentioned, even your duty as parent. One of them is to develop the support and understanding to actually marry them out. is the duty of a parent. Then as a children, they also have a duty towards their parents. They are all stated there. That's why I want you to let me know which aspect, because we can approach marriage from many aspects. basically you are a Chinese, yeah? Then it also involves your husband, your spouse, then of course this one is your daughter. Then you have your daughter's in-law side. Then you have the new member, the son-in-law and all those things. So all this, they also have their own particular aspect of understanding when it comes to marriage, because Chinese have their own tradition and different dialect of Chinese have different type of tradition. So tradition can be one, but most of the time you don't have that understanding, you don't have an open mind, you don't know how to approach this, there can be problem, there can be situation which is very ugly. So earlier, I think you also heard of the sharing from Elsie, right? So Elsie also, because it was also her daughter, almost gone through the ROM and the marriage. Then there are other calamitous who also seek my advice and help, but they encounter problem, they encounter situation. So all these are very important understanding that we have to establish. As I just now I asked you, is there any particular aspect that you want me to talk on? Maybe I will take it as a general question where I try to explain as much as I can cover. Would that be okay to you? Project?
Yes, Brother Teo, yes. Because actually, Sigalo Vada Sutta, Brother Teo has mentioned this before.
I mentioned it before.
Yes, and taught us this before. So one aspect, kind of relationship and our duty as a spouse, children, those are the stuff we understand, you know, we understand and we perform it, you know, we perform it in our life. But comes to like marriage, right? How to go about it in a way that we want to have
that's
harmony,
why these are all
peace,
covered.
You know?
You see, the Buddhist way is very simple. Relatively much more simple, but it's the tradition that complicates the matter. So this one, we have to have the Dhamma to actually have the understanding and the open mind to make sure everything is properly done. I think for your case, because I can see the joy, the photo, all those things, you must have gone through it very smoothly, very well. There is no problem at all for both sides. So you are blessed. Very few people can have such situation. But with the Dhamma, I realize it's a lot easier. A lot easier because we are simple. We are not so rigid in our approach to marriage. Because most important thing that I always advise Kayamita is when it comes to marriage, when it comes to relationship, we have to understand one key fundamental thing. Each and every one of us, we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. So if your children, maybe your son or your daughter, in this case it's your daughter, is getting married, that is her life. Our duty as parents is to advise, to arrange for their marriage, to support them, to get the ball rolling, to kick off the support. Because sometimes children, they also knew, they also don't know what to do. Especially the boy, if they want to marry somebody. Sometimes the lady side, the in-law side, they may have a lot of rigid rules or tradition or things that people tell them. So they want a certain type of condition. And it can bring about misunderstanding, argument, and problem. So earlier on, there was one case also. There was, I think, a few. Maybe I just mention it generally without mentioning name. There was one there that the daughter wanted to get married. Then as they come over and discuss, everything was already more or less resolved and settled. But then the only problem arises. The son-in-law, they want to follow Christian tradition. Then the father, as usual, the first thing that happened is she strongly objected. Is it no? Has to be Buddhist. Oh, then the thing started. Oh, until the thing almost couldn't go through. Everybody was like worried. Then the wife called me. This is what we need you to help. Then she told me what happened. Then after that, actually, he said, I hope you can talk to my husband so that he can understand. I said, no problem, I talk to him. Then I explained to him, I said, you have to understand, when it comes to marriage, you have to think of what is best for your children, your daughter, not about you anymore. That's like the question, who is getting married? You are getting married or your daughter is getting married. But you have a duty as a parent to advise and understand. You have your tradition, your belief system, or your, or what I should say, your principles or conscience. You want it in a certain way, you have the right. I mean, that is your right. But your right should not extend beyond your children's right. Because the children is getting married, not you. So as long as your daughter or your children is okay, is happy, then you should support them. But you should also advise them, your marriage is not something you take for granted. Because marriage involves a major understanding and sacrifice. It involves your entire future after that. Once you are married, that's why the Chinese also have a lot of saying, it is very detrimental when you marry the wrong guy. Then karmically, suffering, misery will follow. So all this saying has its meaning. A wrong decision in marriage can have great implication. And who you marry to, whether it's meant to be or coming that you have to pay or what, you have to understand. Then apart from that, you also have to advise them as children, because it involves such decision, you have to make sure, is this the partner that you want to have as life partner after marriage? Well, otherwise after that it's very difficult to resolve, because the entanglement can be very, very severe and traumatic. But nowadays I realize it's not so bad nowadays. Nowadays the youngsters are different. They all treat this as more acceptable in the way that they are not so badly affected. Of course, not all the case. Some of the case they are also badly affected. But most of them, I realize, want to get married. Some, they say, marry lah. But a lot of them, especially youngster, now they take it very seriously. They know what they want and all those things. So for that, I think that category is not so bad. But a lot of the other category, situation forced them to get married. They get into a situation where they got no choice. They have to end up getting married. Then I have heard of a lot of example or incident that my daughter told me, their generation one. They have this marriage agreed upon. Then the bridegroom, the boy, go and book all the wedding dinner, everything, paid all the deposit, everything. Then on the day of marriage, the bride-to-be disappear. Didn't turn out, not around. Then they cannot cancel the wedding dinner and a lot of things. Then sometime after they are married, not long, they cannot get along. They just want to divorce. And to them, it's like, to break up is like very normal, very normal. Even to change partner, girlfriend, boyfriend, it's like to them it's very normal. They say the new generation is different. But what I'm trying to explain to you is to use our Dhamma understanding to approach this question of marriage, to fulfill our duty as a parent, to advise them and to do our part in our role. So that part, I have already explained a bit regarding how we advise our children, because it's a major decision, it's their life. So if it's not something that they can like understand, then it's better not to get involved. But if it's something that they can understand, then they are willing to see it through. Then the next part after marriage or registration of marriage is very important. So let me go through a few more examples before I zero in into the understanding part. There was another case involving another Kayamita. This one is more complicated. The daughter also, actually, initially was very smart, got federal scholarship, everything. Then very good at study. Then because of karmic thing, when was he then study, then halfway through got problem, then come back. Then after that came and see me. That one resolved. That one nothing to do with marriage. That one nothing to do with marriage. So that one was clear. Then she became much better. Then she determined to like come back and study local. Then she did fairly well. But then the problem start again. Suddenly, you know, second year or final year, I forgot already. Suddenly, the parent called me again. I said, I thought resolved already. He said, yeah, right, you resolved already. I don't know what happened. Now it's another situation. It seems they are Chinese family background. But in the uni, the doctor like somebody who is from Middle East, a Muslim, you know, honestly. So that's why the parent cannot take it, like, shock, you know. So the wife consulted me and I replied an email explaining the duty and all those things, and who is getting married and all those things. Then take care of karma, do your duty. And then she very good. Straight away she understands. Is it no problem? Thank you so much. Now I know what to do. He said, if my husband want to complain, Jamal, what I leave it to him. But for her, she understand already. She applied the Dhamma. She just do her duty, advise the daughter. But finally, I think the consequence of all this decision, the daughter start to realize. Because you have to explain to your children when you are in love, a lot of the questions you never ask. You never even think of it. Because if you marry into another family with different belief system, culture, and overseas, especially Middle East and all those things, are you sure you can fit in? They haven't even gone over to the boys' home and haven't found out a lot of things. So luckily, because of the advice to the mother, then the mother spoke to the daughter, then I think finally they managed to get her to sort things out. Then she came to realize it was really a dangerous thing. So finally, the relationship, they just didn't go ahead. So there was a great relief. Then, of course, there are a lot of other marriage that after getting married many years later, problems start. Then involving third party, ending up divorce and or court case litigation, so many. Then the worst is with children and all those things. Then this thing surfaced. In fact, a lot of them came and consult me. Of course, the bulk of it is through Sui An. Some with suicidal thought and all those things. So there were many, many. So I always advise Kayamita that according to the Buddhist teaching under Sigalwada Sutta, we have a duty not only bring up our children, provide for them the food and shelter, the education, the support, then of course introduce them to some form of Dhamma understanding so that they will know how to live life, so that their life will be taken care of, so that they will not make mistakes. Then teach them the importance of karma, precepts and all these things, but not to be rigid, because tell them your life, you decide. Like for your case, I think you wish them to have the Dhamma. Of course, all parents wish the best for their children. But always remember their life, let them decide what they want. We are different time when they are not ready, don't force them. No point. They have their life. They are born of their karma, heir to their karma, condition and supported by their karma. They are what they are because of their karma. But for them to be your children, you also know they are coming affinity. That's why I saw your daughter so similar to your face. So pretty, so full of joy, so young. So these are the times where they will have the good life. Like you can see from the registration of marriage photo and all those things. Then even as parents, they're rejoicing and all those things. But always remember, don't end up arguing over small things, like how the marriage is to be conducted, then later on the wedding part. Be simple. For me, both my children, I gone through, we were lucky in the sense that our children's boyfriend or girlfriend, the family, they are not the sophisticated and rigid type. They are also relatively simple people, both of the same race, and they are actually very easy to talk to. They also say they also very simple. They are not so concerned about culture. When I explain to them their life, let them decide. They agree, they straight away agree. So both also go through very harmoniously and with good understanding. Then of course, especially my son's side and the wife's side, they know what they want. That's why they make sure it's compatible, then only they talk to us. So when they talk to us, my son also don't know what to do. He said, "Daddy, how?" I said, "Don't worry, you need my support. You need me to go down and talk to the wife, spouse, in-law, son, or what. We will represent you as parents. We will give you the full support. Just let us know. Then need to go down to visit them, pay them a visit. Then like courtesy call and all those things. Then ask for their hand. We do it. Then between the two of you, of course, they can resolve it among themselves. But luckily, her parents are also very simple people. We met the mother, the parent, the father. Then they are very simple. So it was harmoniously resolve and agree upon, and we had good gathering to the registration of marriage. They took their photo, they did it at Tian Ho Kong and all this thing. Then I arranged the dinner, of course. Then in law side, the children, all most of them came back if they can, because that time was pandemic, but almost all came back except the one in Australia. I think the sister in Melbourne cannot make it. The rest all were there. So the dinner was very sumptuous and very well organized. So everybody was full of joy and they were very happy. Then the other thing that I always advise the children is marriage is not a simple decision. It's a major decision in one's life. When you decide to get married means you commit yourself to a marriage contract. I call it a contract. So you know what a marriage contract is, isn't it? It's like a contract. Means you already make that decision to enter into a relationship with someone, like the ceremonial vow. The Christian have their own. Not until death shall we part, and all those things. But of course, you can say what you want during the marriage ceremony. But when it comes to reality, you look at the amount of divorce, so many. So I was told the different type of religion, they try to help their people by having this counseling course before marriage and all those things. Then I think the Buddhists also try to copy similar approach. That's why I saw some of the Buddhist society, they are doing it. I remember BGF, they also have that to help people to go through marriage counseling and other things before marriage and after marriage. And for HGPA, the ceremony is quite well organized. And I witnessed a number of them, but theirs is actually very well organized, but it's only for the marriage registration, because they have the space and all those things, and they did it very well, and people like to do it there, especially those who are Chinese and they have Buddhist background. They like to have it at the temple. So apart from all this, I think the more important thing is the understanding of marriage. That's why I say it's a major decision we make. Both parties, you make. You decide to enter into a relationship, which we call a marriage contract. That's why you go for registration of marriage. It becomes legal. So that's supposed to bind the two together, because after you are married, you are bound by the legal aspect of marriage. So when you enter into that marriage contract or you agree to make that decision, you have to have understanding for the two to develop the good life together. Otherwise, there will be a lot of problem, a lot of suffering, a lot of misery. That's why there is a famous author, Alexander the Book. I remember my teacher always say this to us when I was in Form 5 and Form 6. He said, reality begins after the first day of marriage. You know that sentence. Because before marriage, a lot of things are like the mundane mind, you know, you cannot see, or all fake one, illusionary, delusion. They try to act out of it, pretend before they caught you or get your consent to marry you. Sometimes it could be the boy or the girl. They can be very patient. Everything also can, no problem, take your time. I will wait. Then everything also, like actor and actresses, they don't show their true color. But the moment they are registered, then they start to live a life that is no longer alone. You are no longer single. Then they realize a lot of things not compatible. A lot of things doesn't work out anymore. Oh, then don't know what to do. Then later on, of course, you got problem with in-law too. You stay with your in-law. Oh. But most young generation, they don't understand it. So that one, most of the aspect of in-law is not really affecting them. But sometimes because of other things, it can lead to a lot of misunderstanding. So what I always advise is, even at my daughter's wedding ceremony, I give some advice. Then I remember that time one of the Kayamita's daughter was also there. He said, "Wow, Bertio's advice is very good." I said, when we enter into a marriage contract, in order for that contract to really serve its purpose and work, we have to have this understanding. Once we decide on this, we commit ourselves on this, there is a relationship. And for this relationship to work, the first thing you need is sincerity. Means both of us must be sincere in our approach to this registration of marriage or marriage contract. Then when we have this committed, once we are sincere, we will trust each other. Because trust is very important. If I trust, then our life can go back to normal. No problem. Well, I trust you, you trust me. We will not cheat or deceive or do all those funny things that violate the precepts, the third precept, committing sexual misconduct and all those things. No more such issue. Yeah. Then always remember after that, your life is different. You are no longer alone to decide what you want to do and live your life. You are now married to someone. You have to share a lot of responsibility, duty, and learn to live with each other. So the next thing that comes from trust is sincerity lead to trust. Trust will lead to understanding that because we are sincere to enter into this relationship, we must have this understanding of give and take, or based on consensus, we make decision. Otherwise, it's going to become very complicated. Yeah. Then, through my experience, after seeing so many of these cases and with people consulting me, and I came out with this understanding based on the Buddhist understanding, the Dhamma understanding. That's why I said, your life, you decide. Her life, she decide. So I told them, when it comes to marriage, you have to understand, whatever involving your husband's career, his money, or his in-laws, let him make the final decision he decides. But you can advise as a spouse, as a wife. So similarly, the opposite is the same. The wife, if it's involving your own career, your own parent side, and your money, is the money you already own before you get married, you have the final say. You decide. But your husband can, together with you, support you and advise you, give you advice on whatever. Then whatever you do as a couple, husband and wife, is more efficient than one person do. That's why after that, even they say, well, nowadays, like a lot of people say, to buy land or property is no longer affordable by a lot of young people unless supported by their parents, second generation people. There are some still like first generation, they came out from their maybe hometown, settled down here. They have to sort out things themselves. So when it comes to financing a property, two person is more efficient than one person most of the time, unless you have a situation where only one is working. But nowadays, most of the time, both are career people working together. Then when you are married, you must separate your duty in a very amicable manner. Whatever one is good at, they will handle that aspect. Like for my case, it's very simple. Well, my wife is a teacher up there and she do her duty very well. So whatever family matter, I leave it to her. I say, you decide. Then you need my support or what, you let me know. If I can, I do for you. That's why over the years she came to know, she actually liked to have a nice kitchen where she cook a lot. I said, yeah, I know. That's why finally I decide to renovate the kitchen first before I did out the whole house. Certain essential thing, basic thing, do it first. Then later on, I say, when there is condition, we can have the condition and afford the means to do all this thing. Then we will do a proper one. As I at first, we also thought of upgrading to a semi-D or a bungalow. But then I say the best is, because it involves a lot of work as a civil engineer, I know you have to do renovation and all those things. I say the best is by our neighbor. If our neighbor can sell to us, it's the best. Then while we renovate, we stay one side. Then after we finish, we shift over, we renovate the other side. So no hassle, no need to headache. But I saw the other neighbor. Wow, they have to temporarily rent a house for 6 months, extend to 9 months to wait for their house to be renovated. And even though nearby, you know, one road to another, the amount of things that he has to shift in an hour, it was horrendous. Not easy. So I said, if you want me to do that, I don't want to say. We see how it goes. But then we were very lucky. Our neighbor decided to migrate this time. Finally, I bought home and then I did the renovation. So these are the things that we have to develop understanding about marriage. Then when it comes to sorting things out, technical one, I will do. Yeah, I know. I understand them very well. Yeah, then like, comes to taking government loan or what. My wife leave it to me because she know I'm very good at all this thing. Then I also know we have to prepare ourselves for retirement and all those things. That's why I work towards financial freedom. And she know I'm good at it. She leave it to me. Then things that she is good, I leave it to her. Like taking care of children, marketing. That's why she did her duty very well. So if these are the things that you can sort out and work it out, then there is a lot of harmony, a lot of joy. Then when you have this commitment of sincerity leading to trust, then that relationship becomes very different. Then even like what we went through, my wife, even her sacrifice, because it was not easy being a teacher and yet had to raise the two kids. She always used to tell me, we also don't know how we able to do that, all those things. So these are the things that you must have, the harmony, the understanding. That's why because of that, she also every time like have a lot of gratitude. Because when she heard how I help people, the people who came and see me and consult me, she listened to all their problems. She said, wow, really, this world is not easy. Life is really not easy. So much of this marriage problem, divorce and all those things, involving abuses too. A few of them, I think the husband abused them, hit them and all those things. Then one of them had to land in the hospital for 1 month. It was very traumatic, very traumatic. And they cry a lot, suicide thought, many. So don't wait till all these things happen, then only look at all these things. So marriage to me is an understanding. Because if you look at it from the Buddhist point of view, that is coming behind. Of course, first is to do our duty as parents to marry our children, to make sure we support them and arrange for the marriage. In fact, that is in the Sigalovada Sutta. Then, of course, the harmony part, the understanding part is my understanding. It's not mentioned in the Sigalovada Sutta. So this one is very useful, very helpful. It can help many people. Then if you apply that, their money, their career, their in-law side or whatever, their parents side, let them decide. You only support through idea or giving suggestion and all that stuff. But ultimately, it is their decision to make. Then they will trust you. They were there to consult you and ask you and all. Because finally, you don't interfere with their money or their career or what. You let them make the decision. So likewise, when you have children, when your children have children, it's the same. Where they also have their karma. You also have to have the understanding. You cannot control your children, force them to do things. You must eat, you must take this course, you must study this, you must go belly. No, when you do that, this is coming. What you do, you reap what you sow. In future, you have parents that control you and do all these things back to you. That's why I gave them the freedom. But I have a duty to actually bring them out, educate them, and let them have basic moral understanding, moral principle. Whether they agree or not, want to follow or not, it's up to them. But at least we already given them our advice, I mean, as parents. So that is all in the Sigalovada Sutta. Then the children also, they have their duty when they grow up. They have to support their parents and all those things. It's all stated there. But this is to take care of karma, so that in future, you reap what you sow, what you do will come back to you. You ill-treat your parent, mistreat your parent, you ill-treat your children, or abuse your power during their life or marriage or whatever. Then it will come back to you. In future, you will have parents who will object to your marriage and all those things. And the same thing will happen. Do you want all this to be karmically repeated until in future when you come, you suffer again? If you don't want, you want to avoid all this, then better have the Dhamma understanding now. Your life, you decide. You do your duty as parent, you advise. That is very important. Okay, Bojack, hopefully this advice can help.
Yes, Rati, a very good fact. What you said, the general understanding of marriage and the key factors to support a good relationship and the spouses. Very good. In fact, I actually mentioned sincerity, very important. But what you said about trust and give and take, I yet to come to it because I felt that because that was at the beginning stage, so I felt sincerity was the number one first line.
Yeah.
And follow, when you mentioned about trust and give and take, yes, I will have to follow up on this other aspect as well. And in fact, Bharatio, I learned a lot from you from previous, Dharma sharing, right? Your life, your choice, you have to make parents make the advice,
Make that decision on their own. Very important.
Correct.
Otherwise, the whole situation can become very complicated and very messy. Suffering will arise, argument will arise, misunderstanding.
Correct.
Then this is what the Buddha called the First Noble Truth Reality. Dukkha will arise. That's why Dhamma is very important. Dhamma can solve our life problem, life situation, every aspect of life, whether it's marriage or living life or going through life, working, career, everything, you need Dhamma.
Yes, Bharatio, what you said, the whole summary of it, is very, very useful, part of it, I've done it myself, part of it, I've done it myself, but I didn't really think through it, I also have to share this kind of thing, my experience to my kids, now.
Yeah,
at the
because
early
it's
stage,
your duty as parents.
Yes, it's a duty, So the way you summarize it is very useful checklist for me, Variety. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
I find it very useful. Yes, very useful. Sadhu. Yes.
Yeah.
Best is like we do not argue. Be simple.
Yeah.
You know.
That one is
life,
very important.
Let them decide. Yeah. You give three good advice. Do not argue.
Yeah.
Be simple.
Then,
their life. Let
then
them
just
decide.
Just now also in the Maikayamita, you saw the one Engbi put the two thumb up on or not? That video, the Koilo one. Actually, his analogy, the example that he gave about the tiger and the donkey is actually with the Dhamma intent inside there. Is it why you want?
No. I haven't got a chance to actually catch up with all the messages, because
you go and listen to it first, then you will understand.
I was knocked out, until
I know you're too busy with the arrangement of this. Registration of marriage for your daughter. So before I forget, once again, congratulations to you and your hubby, Pocheng and Sadhu.
Thank you. Sadhu. Rejoice, brother Theo.
Yeah, rejoice. In fact, Sui An also text me.
Brother Theo, I will listen to that video that you said.
Yeah, you listen. That one is very helpful. But maybe I can summarize the thing here. Yeah, I still have some time. The other thing is we also, as Kayamita, would like to thank you, Sister Po Cheng and family, for donating $1,000 to our Kayamita Fund on behalf of your daughter's registration of marriage and all those things, and wishing us to give her the blessing of the triple gem. So we rejoice.
Sadhu.
The gist of the analogy is very good. It is about a story of this tiger. The tiger see the grass as the grass. The grass is green. But the donkey, somehow, I think, he see the grass as blue. So it was argued. So they argue until both also don't want to give way. Both also very stubborn, very rigid. Then they decide to approach the lion, who is supposed to be king of the animal in the forest. So the lion, very smart, very wise, he asks, what is the problem? So the donkey say, everybody know the grass is blue. Huh? The lion say, oh, blue, huh? Okay, blue. So what is the problem? He said, the tiger say, is green. Then the tiger, of course, also know that it is green. So he talked to the lion and said, it's green. He said, isn't it? But the lion actually ignored the tiger. He told the donkey. He said, okay, for what the tiger has done, we will punish him. For 3 days, he cannot talk. Then after that, the tiger couldn't understand. He approached the lion separately. He said, why did you do that to me? I was not wrong. The donkey was wrong. Deluded. The lion told the tiger, he said, do you know you have created such a big problem? He said, you argue with a deluded guy, stupid fellow. That's why the donkey is like an ass. Is it an ass? Over the grass. But what? I decide to punish you for 3 days, cannot talk. It's nothing to do with whether the grass is green or blue. But that is irrelevant to life. In the first place, why you will argue with a guy who cannot understand, who is deluded, who is very rigid? In normal Dhamma life, it's like that. If you have a situation where that guy is like that, don't waste time. Just like I used to advise you all. If he wants to be right, yeah, you are right. Right according to you. I didn't lie. So just be humble. Accept the reality. Think it's just the way it is. In this world, a lot of people, they have the ego. They want to be right. So wanting to be right can be delusional. Right according to who? They never inquire. They never accept it. So all these are beautiful Dhamma. So you go back, you listen, you understand. Okay? Sadhu to you.
Yes, sadhu. Yeah, very good analogy. Very useful, good reminder.
That's why when Amy saw the thing, he gave double thumb out, and then I sadhu her. Because she can understand. Because it's very relevant to life, to society. Some people are like that. No point. Why must we try to be right? If we do that, we become like them. We end up no different as them because argument, misunderstanding. So if you have the Dhamma, you will know how to avoid all these things. No point. Even we make the aspiration in that imina punyang kamina, we vow to avoid the foolish, meet up with the wise. The foolish and the heedless, you must avoid them. Understand? Otherwise, you get yourself entangled more and more. You get yourself into trouble for nothing. And most of the time, it's on ideology, misunderstanding. I will say, that's why smile, be humble, laugh it out, and just let things be and move on. No need to be right. Okay. I think we already time 6:04. So thank you so much for saying. Anything else you want to add?
No, Brad. I think it's very comprehensive, you know, and very useful for me and for those Kayamitas going to be, having children that is going
going through marriage and all those.
Yeah,
things.
Going through marriage.
It will be very useful.
Very useful, yes. Thank you very much, Brad. I learned so much.
Sadhu, we also
and
like
also
to thank
Sister Envy for that a very nice analogy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Reminder, you know, don't argue, you know, with the
Yeah,
Buddhist
yeah, yeah.
people, get entangled for no
Yeah, yeah,
reason, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
and suffering will follow
Yeah,
you.
yeah, yeah.
It's very
Right.
good, very good. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu,
Thank you,
sadhu,
Matthew.
sadhu. Yeah,
Thank you.
thank you for creating the condition for this sharing to be.